Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and future of podcasting and digital media. I'm your host, Midroll Media CEO, Adam Sachs. I'm happy to say that my guest today is Rabia Chowdhury. She is an attorney and co-host of the Undisclosed podcast, which is revisiting and re-examining the case of Adnan Syed, the subject of the Serial podcast. Rabia is also the president of the Safe Nation Collaborative, an initiative designed to foster dialogue and cooperative relationships between American Muslim communities and the national security apparatus, as well as provide cultural competency training to law enforcement, corrections personnel, and homeland security officials. And she is a National Security Fellow at the New America Foundation, where her work focuses on the empowerment of the American Muslim communities in the national security realm. Thank you so much for being here, Rabia.
Thanks for having me, Adam. It's my pleasure.
So I want to talk a lot about your show, Undisclosed, because it's really been quite a phenomenon. And I'd like to start by kind of starting at the beginning. And I think from what I understand, the show came about really because you're an old friend of Adnan Syed, the primary subject of the Serial podcast. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, Adnan is my younger brother's best friend. They've known each other since they were, I think, in freshman in high school, like 13, 14 years old. So he's much younger than me, but we're family friends as well. Our parents are friends. They live in the same, they still live in the same neighborhood. They have for many, many years. So I've known him since he was a kid.
And you are the person who brought the story to Sarah at Serial?
I did. You know, I've been there with the family just kind of as a supporter and friend and helping deal with the appellate process and all these things over the years. And when I realized that our last appeal was pretty much shot, I knew that it wasn't going to work. I just kind of made the independent decision to find somebody in the media to help investigate the story. And so I reached out to Sarah, and she picked it up, and the rest is history.
Did you know Sarah previously, or you knew of her work at least?
I'm ashamed to admit I should have known of her work, but I didn't, and I didn't know her. I was not even looking for anybody in particular. I just started searching online for a reporter or journalist who had covered the case 15, 16 years ago when it was reported locally, and she had written a number of pieces about Adnan's attorney who had been disbarred. And so Sarah had written about that whole situation and why she had been disbarred and all the client complaints. And she was literally the first name I came across. I looked her up. I saw she worked for This American Life. And I thought, oh, well, they're reputable. But I had never really listened to any of her work before. But I shot her an email that night. And I think the very next day I heard back. And she visited us within a couple of weeks and just took it from there.
That's amazing. And then how much, so you a couple of weeks later, you had a sit down with her, and then was it sort of like a handoff? You described all the information that you had on the case, and then you said, like, good luck and thanks for, you know, making this public. did you have any idea, like, how things would go from there?
No, you know, I mean, the first, here's the thing. I mean, like, when I, we agreed to meet, and then I kind of had second thoughts, because I thought, okay, you know, This American Life is a great show, but it's like a one-hour radio show. Is this really what I want? Because I was thinking, I want somebody local who really knows the criminal scene in Baltimore, who knows the judges and the snitches and all this gritty stuff, and who really is tapped into that community, right? So I was having second thoughts even before meeting Sarah, and I thought, you know, when she comes, I was kind of split. I said, on one hand, I need to convince her to take it. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you know, is she the right person? And maybe I should ask her to work with a local reporter, and I did actually do that. So the first time she came, it was really an informal meeting. I had a small selection of the documents that I've always kept with myself, and I showed her those. Me and my brother met with her, and we just kind of gave her a very general sense of the story and some of the big weirdness. There's a lot of weirdness in the story, but some of the bigger things. And then she was going to make calls. She was going to talk to Adnan. She was going to decide if she was going to take the story. Mm-hmm. And so we had to kind of wait, and we gave her a couple months. And I think after about 2 months, she's like, yeah, I'm in. And then she wanted, or maybe it was less, I can't remember, but then she wanted, like, you know, all the files, and that was boxes and boxes and boxes. So we turned those over, and that's when we knew that she was seriously committed.
And at that point, did you think it was going to be a segment on This American Life?
I didn't have any idea what it was going to look like. I really thought, and I thought it was going to be like one of their shows, like a 1 hour uh-huh. you know, show. But I honestly didn't even care. What I wanted was somebody who had skills that like I didn't have, who could do things that lawyers can't do because of ethical considerations. Somebody who would just really find stuff, like get people to talk, find us evidence for the appeal. I kind of didn't pay attention too much to what the end result would look like. You know, I was more concerned about her investigative skills.
So you wanted more. You just wanted someone who really knew how to dig and who really knew how to then expose whatever they were finding.
Absolutely. I mean, like, for example, you know, Sarah could reach out to witnesses that I couldn't, right? I mean, I was a witness in the appeal. I cannot be reaching out to witnesses because that's like tampering with witnesses. So I needed somebody who could do all kinds of things and maybe find something we overlooked over, you know, all these years.
And so how much did you work with Sarah kind of like in the ongoing production of the show?
You know, I think it was totally my misunderstanding about how this dynamic would operate. For some reason, I thought we're all in this together and I'm going to be, you know, doing the rounds with her. And, you know, I remember the day she was going to be doing the ride with Dana to see if she could do it in the 21 minutes or whatever it was. And that was one of the episodes. And she told me, "I'm coming to town. I'm going to be doing this." And I said, "Oh, great. I'd love to ride with you." And she was like, no. So that's the day I realized that, this is her thing and I need to stay out of it. So that was pretty early on.
Was that hard? When I realized was that a hard conversation when you said, "I'm coming with you," and she said no?
I mean, she was very gracious. She didn't just say no, you know, just like that. She was just like, maybe it's better. I'm going to have one of the Baltimore Sun reporters with me. But she was very gentle about breaking it to me that this is her story and I'm not going to be there with her. But then I kind of got it and I realized, okay, we have to let her do her thing and just be patient. I didn't always know who she's talking to. I didn't always know what she had found. It was only like a couple of things that she let us know. And those were things that would directly impact the case. Like when she spoke to Asia, and then later when Asia, actually after the show, when the show was running, she let us know that Asia had contacted her and heard the show and wanted to be back, you know, wanted to give a new affidavit to support us. So, but otherwise I didn't know any, I knew very, very little about the work. And it wasn't until about 2 weeks before Serial launched, or maybe a week, I don't know, that she said, "Okay, we're doing a 12-part series."
Wow.
And a new podcast.
Were you shocked?
And I didn't know what a podcast. Yeah, I didn't know what a podcast was, first of all. But also, when she said 12 episodes, I was like, 12? That's really amazing. And I remember telling a couple of friends, and they thought that I had misheard, because they're like, no, they don't, like, This American,
this American Life,
doesn't,
do 12 episode series.
Right. So I just didn't know. I just was like, okay, Sarah, let's see what happens. And, obviously the Serial was amazing. The response to it was amazing and overwhelming. And it's still ongoing.
And were you pleased with the outcome of the show itself?
You know, I mean, the complication here, I think, for me, for anybody who's close to Adnan and for Adnan himself, is that we found ourselves developing a relationship with Sarah and relying on her and considering her a friend. And we had trouble separating that from her as a professional doing a job. So there is no question that without the momentum of Serial, we would not be where we are in his case today. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Like, nobody cares about a Baltimore murder case. Having said that, every week I would be like, crap, I wish she had said that. I wish she had done that. I wish she had included that. I always felt like, you know, I wanted to jump in and, you know, and sometimes they reached conclusions that didn't make me happy. And she always, you know, up until the end, even today, she kind of equivocates about where she stands on his innocence or not. I mean, I think she in her heart believes, doesn't think that he's guilty, but I guess professionally it's hard for her to come out and say it, but that's only because of our personal relationship, you know, because it's like, well, I thought you were my friend.
Right.
I don't know. So it's complicated. I just want to say it's complicated.
Is it those complicated feelings that led you to decide to create Undisclosed?
No, that wasn't it actually at all. Undisclosed is not any kind of a challenge to Serial at all. I mean, Undisclosed wouldn't exist without Serial. What happened was, as Serial was ongoing, this online community just sprung up that was obsessed with the case. And I would blog, and every so often I would put like documents up, you know, I put some trial testimony, you know, I was trying to like fill in gaps. At the same time, not Trump Sarah, which I promised I wouldn't ever do that. And then there are two lawyers who I didn't know them at all, Susan Simpson, Colin Miller, that I discovered through Reddit that these guys were blogging about the case. So I started reading their blogs, and I was like, especially Susan, I was like, who is this woman? She's like amazing. And she was articulating issues in the case that we knew were weird, but we just couldn't figure out what was like why Jay's statement kept changing. Like, she figured it out. Mm-hmm. Sarah couldn't figure, none of us could figure it out. So I contacted them and I said, listen, if you guys really are want to keep this going, I can give you all the documents. I would love to have you help investigate. And so we did so, but then a few months later we realized is that a very, very small number of people are reading their blogs. Because Susan would have like 40-page blogs, and who's going to read it? Right. So one of our trustees of the legal fund was like, you need to take all this information and put it in a podcast, because that's what people have gotten used to with this case. They want to hear it.
And you had only just discovered what a podcast was by Serial.
Like 6 months prior or right. something like that. I mean, like, and I was, and the three of us have never done this. We don't know. I mean, and our first episode totally reflected how rough it was for us. But we did it within 2 weeks. We had a name, we had a logo. We just threw it together. And we're like, really we'll figure it out as we go along.
I read that you wanted to call the show Shut Up and Let Me Talk. Was that real or right. was that a joke?
I was joking. We were talking about what it should be. We didn't know what we should call it, but Susan I think had come up with that name and we liked it, but I was just being facetious.
So it seems like you really have come a long way with the podcast. You mentioned that the first episode sounds very different from the way the show sounds now. What was the team like at the time creating the podcast? Was it really just the three of you sitting around a computer and recording?
Yeah, I mean, we're all in different locations. We just Skype together. We like, I just like, you know, bought a mic off of Amazon, not knowing like what I'm doing. And then, so Susan had a Reddit friend actually, who did some editing work, and he was out in the UK. So Susan said, you know what, Amar Naji, and she's like, you know, he's volunteering to do it. We're all volunteers, by the way. Although that changed later, but initially we were all volunteers. And she's like, you know, he'll do it. And what happened was we put together the first episode, and then it got all this press, right? That this is going to come out, and this is like Serial Part Two, and it wasn't right. supposed to be Serial Part Two. So we were under a lot of pressure. And then that week when we recorded, Amar Naji was like, I don't have the time to edit this week. So we're like, oh my God. So I had to, like, literally overnight, me personally had to learn GarageBand and try to edit that thing myself. Mm-hmm. It was a disaster. But we still had to put it out there.
Yeah. And this was in April, I believe, right? That's when the show debuted.
This was in April. Yeah. And somebody else had written, and another Reddit friend of Susan's had written up some music for us, and her husband put together the website. It was just all bunches of people who just trying to make it happen. And it was great. After about second or third episode, we realized that we need to find someone professional to be, you know, editing and producing. And so we brought on Rebecca Lavoie, who has been great in terms of consulting. Amar still does, like, all of our addendums. Rebecca does the episodes. And I think that's really tightened it up. So, you know, I think there's a difference in production value definitely over time. But also, you know, we got a lot of flack for not being as pretty as Serial, not being as narrative. And after a bit, I think we just decided to own it. We're like, we're just three geeks, the heavy podcast. It's not going to be easy listening.
And were you totally surprised by how much attention the show got right from the start?
Yeah, we were surprised. I mean, not completely surprised. I mean, because we expected it was going to happen because of Serial. You know, people just wanted Serial to go on and on forever. But I was worried because this was not going to be that. And I didn't expect it. I think that after the first couple weeks, the listenership like dropped off sharply. But then I started picking back up. So I think I was surprised at the resurrection more so. Because we're nearing, like, I think 40 million listens. And I never expected that.
And do you guys do anything to promote the show? Or did you do anything ahead of the show's release?
Oh gosh, no. I think we just told the Baltimore Sun that we'd be doing it, and we said we will give you an advance copy of the first episode, and they're just so they could review it, and their review was really bad. They're like, this is a disaster. So that didn't help. I wish they'd go back and re-review it. But,
yeah.
No, we didn't. We didn't know what I was like, oh, I'll set up the Twitter account. Like, we didn't know what we were doing.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a minute. I want to take a minute to talk about a foundation that's important to me. It's called the Rett Syndrome Research Trust. Rett Syndrome is a non-inherited X chromosome disorder that affects 350,000 girls and women. It is as common as ALS and cystic fibrosis, but has far less funding. It's a neurological disorder that impairs mobility, communication, use of hands, among many other scary things. Unlike any other neurological disease, Rett has been proven in animal studies to be curable and completely reversible. It's pacing to be the first curable brain disorder ever. Pretty incredible. And when Rett is cured, other widespread neurological conditions like autism, bipolar disorder, and schizophrenia stand to benefit. So I would ask you all to please go to reverserett.org. That's reverse, R-E-V-E-R-S-E, Rett, R-E-T-T, .org/today. And you can see a story about Rett syndrome that appeared on the Today Show. And if you want to donate, that would be amazing. The goal is for them to hit $100,000 by year end. And I think they're well on their way. But anybody that wants to help out, it would be greatly appreciated. So that's Reverse Rett. And Rett is R-E-T-T. ReverseRett.org/today. And there's a little donate button and you can watch the video. Thank you so much. And now we'll go back to the show. We're back with Rabia Chaudhry from the Undisclosed Podcast. So, Rabia, when we left to take our break, we were talking about some of the success the show has had. And in addition to all of the press attention, the show has become hugely popular. It's been pretty much at or near the top of the iTunes charts since its launch. How has your life changed, if at all, as a result of the success of the podcast?
I mean, the odd thing is, you know, and for me, Susan and Colin, we all have like our day jobs. And so this is something we have to find like bits and pieces of time during the week to do. And we did not ever expect, honestly, we thought maybe we'll get a couple hundred thousand listeners, loyal listeners, like maybe 100,000 people. Like that is what we were expecting. So that coming and then attached with, I mean, like there's like this celebrity that's become attached with it. It's weird. Like people want to take pictures with you and they say, I'm fans.
I mentioned this to you during the break, but my mom and sister were like, couldn't believe I was talking to you today. They were starstruck. So yeah.
I'll talk to them whenever they want. I don't even understand like what that's about. So that's really odd to me. It's very unexpected. The other thing that's unexpected to me, but I think is really positive, is the fact that people are really paying attention to, I mean, even though it's a heavy podcast, it's difficult to get through. There's a lot of legalese and details. Like our audience is very general. And these are people who are now really invested and interested in the criminal justice, in the failings of the system, in broader issues, meta issues. We recently did an episode where we had a group of incarcerated men talk about the case, talk about the system, and it really impacted people. And there are people who are like, we need to make systematic changes. So I feel like we're like in a moment of time with Black Lives Matter and police brutality, mm-hmm. that all of these things are kind of coming to the forefront. And I am very happy to be part of that specifically.
And do you think the success of the show and this, you know, your profile rising, it ultimately has helped Adnan as well?
You know, I do think so. I think so because I know that the legal community in Baltimore and actually across the country are paying attention to Undisclosed. Like when we, you know, not just Undisclosed, but like the evidence that we actually, you know, talk about in Undisclosed and has been investigated by our team. Just his lawyer's most recent filing included evidence that Susan found, right? And we talked about an episode. So we're having a real impact there. And I have been told by numerous people in the Baltimore legal community, both in the state's attorney's office and even judges' clerks, that those people are listening. I feel like if the podcast was not as popular, the state might not feel, and maybe even the court, I don't know, but definitely the state might not feel as much pressure, but I think they're feeling a lot of heat because of it. It's good.
It's great. And I think one thing that, you know, maybe you didn't anticipate that I'd love to talk about is that you guys are generating ad revenue as well. Full disclosure, Midroll sells the ads for the Undisclosed podcast. Did you anticipate that the show would generate revenue?
Oh, gosh. No, we actually had no expectation to even have sponsors. And I remember early on when we started getting solicitations from different you know, entities that, you know, we'd like to sponsor your show. We actually had to have a conversation about, do we want this? Do we want like any kind of sponsorships, or should we just be us? And so then, you know, we made the deliberate decision, because none of us want to be enriched from it. Susan doesn't get paid. Colin doesn't get paid. I don't get paid. There's only literally one person on the entire crew who gets paid, you know, for the professional work of producing it. So we were afraid that we didn't want that to happen, to people think that we're in it for any other reason than why we're there. So when we decided that, okay, fine, we will take on sponsorships, but only if the proceeds go to the legal fund, that's when we felt comfortable. And we didn't know the amount of money that ads could generate. But the amazing thing is, because I've been struggling since November to raise money for his legal funds, and we've done okay, but there's a lot. I mean, it's very expensive. That the ad revenue has taken all the pressure off the fundraising. Like, I don't have to worry about fundraising anymore because the ad revenue covers his legal costs.
That's incredible. So the bulk of the money that you guys are generating through ads is going to cover legal costs?
All of it.
Wow.
Almost all of it. Like, that's 99% of it, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And what would you say has been the most difficult thing about producing the show?
I mean, I think the technical issues. Like, sometimes there are times when you've just recorded like an amazing 40 minutes together and oops, it didn't get recorded. Or just technical things. Like, we've had glitches like that. All of us being in different spaces, not really having like a studio that we can be in together. Those types of things have been a little difficult. But also keeping pace with the momentum in the public can be hard. Managing the social media, people's expectations, you know, responding. We want to be responsive online. That can be sometimes challenging. For me, Susan and Colin do a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of the content. They are on it. They do a lot of the script writing, and I'm kind of like the glue, and I'm not. They are the brains of this operation, and sometimes it can be like it can be hard for us to decide as a team, like what is important enough to share and what we need to hold back or is just too much. And I know even with people might think that, oh my God, we give so much details and is it not, you know, aren't you already giving us everything? No, we actually aren't. There's other things that we talk about or like, nah, that's probably too minor to discuss. And so we have to make those calls sometimes.
And what would you say has been the most rewarding aspect of producing the show?
I think the most rewarding aspect, I mean, like, there are levels to it. Number one, of course, is having an impact on Adnan's case. For me, it's always been about that. But beyond that, also just calling attention to these issues in the system and wrongful convictions. And, you know, we decided because of the tremendous response and also other people asking us, what about this case? Would you look at this case, and even lawyers reaching out to us, that we will do continued seasons on different wrongful convictions. So that is very rewarding. It's also kind of cool that people like my voice, because I've never liked my voice, so that's nice to hear.
So I want to talk about the other seasons in a minute, because I'm very curious about that. But what I think is really interesting about Serial and Undisclosed is that it seems like people are recognizing that podcasting can really be used as a tool for justice in a lot of ways. It's an interesting medium for that.
Absolutely. And you know what's really interesting? I mean, a lot of my friends and colleagues work in different kind of social justice things, or they have some kind of public profile. And like, literally, since Undisclosed began, I think four of my friends have started their own podcast. And I mean, which is great, right? Like, they're being able to kind of share their work in a way that nobody was hearing it before. I think it's a very powerful tool.
And are you guys preparing for like increased or renewed interest in Undisclosed when Serial season 2 comes out?
I don't know. I feel like there's a part of me that thinks that there will be a drop in interest depending on people's capacity to absorb podcasts. Like, you know, some people can probably only do one or two. But
so there might actually be a drop in interest, but at the same time, I feel like the interesting thing is when I, when the announcement for the new season of Serial came out with this different potential case, a lot of the responses I read from people online were that, oh gosh, we thought they're going to continue with Adnan's case. Like, people are very obsessed with Adnan's case.
Right.
And very invested in the case personally. So there is an attachment, and I think especially our listeners, like, I don't think they would come along. We've done almost 20 episodes. I don't think they come along for a ride that far and then drop it for Serial if they really, you know, weren't that attached to the case. So
I think my bold prediction is that if anything, Serial season 2 coming out is going to increase interest in Serial season 1. From the few people who haven't even heard of Serial season 1 yet, and that will lead even more people to listen to Undisclosed.
Well, you have a lot more expertise than me on these issues, so I will believe at you.
Well, we're all incentivized for Undisclosed to do great, so I'm hopeful.
good.
And so you guys have no connection then to season 2 of Serial, is that right?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, like, the funny thing is I was joking that, like, Sarah can't escape being at least one degree away from me. What happened was, as she was investigating, she contacted one of my good friends in connection with her own investigation for the new case, and he contacted me and said, oh, this is so weird. Like, Sarah Koenig contacted me, and should I speak to her? And I said, yeah, definitely speak to her, help her, you know, if she needs help with this case. And I think he let her know, oh, you know, I'm good friends with Rabia, and I'm happy to speak with you. And I thought, oh gosh, she's probably like, oh no, not
she's
Rabia.
She's like, Rabia is stalking me.
but otherwise, no, there's really no contact.
And so the future of Undisclosed is, are you guys, you're going to start looking into new cases?
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of potential cases people have sent us, and there are different considerations as we decide which one to look into. You know, obviously, it has to be something that seems like almost a clear wrongful conviction. Mm-hmm. We want it to be somebody who maybe doesn't have the kind of resources. I mean, most people don't. But also, we need to be able to access the files, right? So if it's a case where either, there's, you know, sometimes attorneys are like, no, I'm not giving you my files. What are you going to do? Then you could be in trouble. So there's a number of different considerations that we are looking at, and probably it won't be until early next spring that we announce what we're going to do.
And would that be a new show in addition to Undisclosed, and Undisclosed would continue to cover the Adnan case, or would it be
no
this would be so it would be basically
that would
like
be Undisclosed.
Gotcha. It would be like season 2 of Undisclosed.
It would still be Undisclosed. I mean we don't know what Adnan's case is going to look like next year. I mean, the way things are going, he could be granted relief sooner than we expected, but you just never know with this stuff. But you know, with any development in Adnan's case, we would continue reporting on it. We wouldn't just walk away and be like, well, we're done. Mm-hmm. I can't ever be done. I just can't. So I'm gonna, and I know Susan and Colin also don't want to, are also very much want to see this all the way through. So even though we might start reporting on another case, whatever developments happen in Adnan's case, we would continue to update people on that.
Great. And as for the future of Undisclosed, do you see yourself, and do you and Susan and Colin all see yourselves doing it, in, you know, indefinitely?
I mean, I guess it depends on the response, right? I mean, like, one of the concerns is, well, we had a jump start with Adnan's case because of Serial. If we do another case and there's not as much interest, you know, I still think when you're trying to help somebody who's been wrongfully convicted, it's a win-win situation, right? I mean, even if you get 100,000 people to listen, it's a win-win. As long as we can have some impact on that person's condition, it's important to do the work. Indefinitely, I guess. I mean, we're thinking 2, 3, 4, you know, seasons maybe, but we just don't know for sure.
Well, it's been really a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here, Rabia. Where can people find you and your work?
Well, definitely, I hope people follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at Undisclosed Pod. You can follow me personally. I tweet all the time. My handle is Rabia Squared. And Susan and Colin are also on Twitter. You'll easily find us if you go to the Undisclosed Podcast Twitter page. But also, we have a Facebook page, too. So you can follow this. And then we have a website, www.undisclosed-podcast.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And my listeners, if you haven't already, definitely check out The Undisclosed Show. And thank you so much for listening, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot,
it.
Adam. I appreciate it.
Everybody, please subscribe to the show at earwolf.com or on iTunes, and please rate and review the show. And until next time, happy podcasting. Thanks, Robbie. That was awesome. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Attention humans, before you turn your podcast application off, why not listen to the best podcast in the universe? Improv for Humans with Matt Besser.
Oh, welcome to Improv for Humans with Matt Besser. That's me!
Improv legend Matt Besser and his friends. Take your suggestions.
Three of the best improvisers in the world will be improvising off your suggestions given to me at Twitter, newspaper articles. We're gonna crap on YouTube
and turn them into long-form improv comedy.
But I wasn't referring to the lion when I said lion. I was referring to your tooth.
What?
That's what I call teeth now.
Oh, I see.
Lions. Right now, we're gonna knock that crown right out in one fast shot.
What do you know?
Swift shot.
Can I be honest with you?
What?
As your sole defender? I'm beginning to feel that your lion hunting activities are crossing into your dental activities in a way that I had not anticipated.
Listen to Improv for Humans on iTunes, evolve.com, Howl, or your favorite podcast app.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Reza Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.